You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Credo Mobile. With Credo, your voice reflects your values. Check out credomobile.com/majority for details.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 21st, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Actually, I just lied. No, I'm in a secret location preparing for my vacation. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And as it is the final live Friday of 2012 on this program, actually the final live day of 2012 on this program, we will have not just Isabel Gillies with films, but also Matthew Film Guy. It could turn ugly, folks. It could turn very, very ugly. Okay. That dropped out quickly. Just a couple of housekeeping notes that I would like to make you aware of, this being the final day of the year. First off, let me say that over the course of the next six show days, as it were, I don't recognize weekends. I work through weekends anyways, but I only contemplate days in terms of how they relate to the show. We will have a collection of best ofs for you. We've got some great interviews, more content than you could possibly ever devour during your break here, but you got a lot to choose from. We're doing two full-length interviews a day. We've got some libertarian calls sprinkled in there. We've got some of my rants sprinkled in there. I know you're going to enjoy it, but let me just say one thing right up front as a bit of an apology to members. We have, as you all know, that we're doing this, and it's hopefully it will go past December. I don't know if it will, but I hope it does. We are being sponsored by Credo. And they've got a great deal for us, for you. You can go to the site and check it out. You can check the emails that I've sent you. You can. There's a lot of different ways. I've included those ads, or they're going to be included, I should say, in the pre-recorded best ofs. So members will hear them too. And I ask your indulgence for this one week. We just don't have the resources. I mean, I suppose I could tell Matt that he can't have any vacation whatsoever, that he's got to be working. But we don't have the ability to put out two different products, two different shows during this week. So I ask your indulgence. I know it's annoying to be a member and then listen to ads. But if you will indulge us for this 1 week, we appreciate it greatly. So and with that said, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Cliff Schechter. I have a feeling that Cliff is going to have a lot to say about what was that guy, Wayne LaPierre, who just gave a press conference, apparently, and it was sort of insane, but probably not to be not unexpected from the head of the NRA. We're also going to talk about what took place in the House yesterday. John Boehner got Boehnered. I frankly don't know that it's a big help for us that he got Boehnered, but we'll see. Cliff and I will talk about it. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, folks, a quick reminder. This month, the Majority Report is being sponsored by a great company which uses 1% of their revenue to fund progressive nonprofits and even more of their revenue to fund progressive political action. I'm talking about Credo Mobile, the only progressive cell phone company in the entire universe. I don't know. They're a great sponsor because, like the Majority Report, their politics are not funded by any one funder who dictates the positions they take. So they fight regressive establishment and right-wing policies without kowtowing. Credo Mobile is offering Majority Report listeners a great deal. 40% off all your first-year voice fees, true unlimited data, and a $350 credit against any cost you have in getting out of your contract with the other guys who happen to fund Republican candidates and agitate for Tea Party values. Go to credomobile.com/majority right now to get this deal before it ends on December 31st. That's credomobile.com/majority. Get yourself a great phone, get yourself a company that is agitating for your values, and help this show out. CredoMobile.com/majority.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. On the phone, it hopefully is the great Cliff Schechter. Cliff, welcome to the program. Cliff, are you there?
I'm here. I can't really hear you with the music.
Oh, is the music still going on? Wait a second. How about that? Is that better?
Now I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, sorry about that. You know how it is. I'm always reinventing the wheel when I'm out of the studio. It's always a huge, dilemma for me. And later in the program, I think we'll probably have my daughter on to give a year-end in review report, and it's all going to be about how Daddy freaked out today.
Right. Well, I think maybe she should have been the one to respond today. She would have made more sense if she had given a press conference on guns earlier.
This,
or actually, not on guns, other things.
On
video games. Because, what I really can't stand is when Donkey Kong busts into a school and starts shooting people.
Look, I think there is one can certainly make an argument that there are elements to our culture that add to a culture of violence. There's no doubt about it. I mean,
there are many of, I guess I made that statement, so I don't mean to cut you off, but I should be clear about my view on this, which is I do think there are elements of that. I have young kids, and sometimes, and I guess I've become an old person now, but I'll turn on a show, like I remember turning on something like Friends at 8 o'clock at night, and they're talking about things that I don't want my kids to be hearing. There's violence everywhere in front of my kids. We just went to like a party at Chuck E. Cheese the other day, and there, you know, there's a game there that literally almost is like fully simulating a machine gun. Yeah. You know, I mean, and these things that maybe in the past didn't bother you much bother me. I don't know what the answer is. It may be the same answer that some of the answer to the gun industry is, which is public shaming, because I don't think laws, you know, in that case, you can't outlaw that, or at least you can maybe for kids. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of gray area, but what the NRA is doing is making it all about that. And
right.
It has nothing to do. I mean, all these other countries, Canada, Japan, I've been to Canada, I've been to Japan, all right? I lived in England, I lived in France. I'll tell you this, they've got violent video games and they've got violent television shows, and some of that stuff they'll show just right there on the BBC, not on cable or whatever. And you know what? They don't have they've got right now in England, they've got 1/30th the level of gun violence we've got. You know, so there's got to be something they're doing differently. And the only two things I can find that they're really doing differently are actually funding their mental health services and having strict gun control. So those are the two things I'm going to say will work.
I would also add, I mean, you know, look, as long as we're talking about culture, let's take the whole thing. We in this country still allow the state to kill people. And,
yes.
You know, I mean, so we're not saying that, you know, and by doing that, now I don't know that my 7-year-old daughter is terribly conscious about it. But it's not 7-year-olds who are going out there and shooting people. The bottom line is that we as a society still say that it is justified to kill people. And then after that, we sort of slice and dice as to what the circumstances are that are legitimate for killing to take place. We kill people overseas, of course.
We torture people.
I mean, but once you make that decision that the state sanctions killing, everything else is a commentary, as they say. You know, the question becomes, you know, under what circumstances is it legitimate? And it's not hard for any number of wackos or non-wackos to find that they're justified in killing. The other killings are not justified, but my killing is that's justified.
Right.
So,
no, I think you make a great point. And, you know, I've talked a lot about culture. I've made sure to go everywhere and sort of make this a key element. I mean, ever since we had that conversation before this last bout of unbelievable tragedy and craziness happened, when we had Bob Costas up.
Yep.
And that was mostly what he was talking about. And yep. That is exactly right. A culture, you know, when you say it's okay for the state to kill people, and when you say, and I used to believe in the death penalty a while back, and a number of things swayed me against it from its obviously utter unfairness to we need to be better than that and be civilized. But this is another byproduct of that. You're exactly right. You know, and you know, the torture and the wars and the, I mean, in other words, the way that we just sort of, you know, knee jerk, to quote, you know, Rick Perry, Rick Perry, right? I was about to say Steve Perry, but that's a whole different Perry.
Right.
You know, his whole little knee jerk thing. Well, actually, it's the other knee jerk thing, in that a gun is the way to, I mean, that's what Stand Your Ground essentially is saying. You should have the right to just pull out a gun and shoot somebody. That's the way you handle a situation. You don't handle it by trying to avoid it. Obviously, you still have the right to protect yourself if someone's going to try to kill you. But it's to say, you know, you don't really need to avoid the situation. You may get in a fight with a guy in line for pizza. You may have seen that story the other day. Well, just pull out your gun and shoot him 5 times in the stomach, and you were standing your ground. I mean, it's that that's a huge part of our culture, and I think that ties everything together. That's our media glorifying violence. That's our video games. That is our laws. Our laws, obviously, what our politicians, that when we allow people to – I mean, that's why I've loved watching Piers Morgan recently, and I've loved watching Lawrence O'Donnell and some others that just destroy these guys, because when you right. allow them to go on and make arguments like these arguments are legitimate – about how we should all be armed and all that. That is part of our culture, and that sends a message. When you allow people, you know, the killing that people have probably forgotten about that happened in a high school here in northern Ohio, in Chardon this summer, in our summer of many killings, or maybe it wasn't even in the spring. I don't remember even anymore because there have been so many of these things.
Yeah.
Was a kid finding guns lying around his grandfather's barn, so he just picked up one and took it in. Can you imagine? I mean, if his grandfather had a bottle of whiskey lying around and he had picked that up and had drinks, the guy, his grandfather probably would have went to prison. But it was okay that he had, you know, had guns lying around, because that's just America. And I mean, it's changing the culture of that these are dangerous, that they are not the answer to our problems, And you need to do that through all sorts of different means. You need to look back to what we've done with secondhand smoke and, you know, drunk driving and other things that we've successfully shamed people and used law and politics and media and a variety of things to shame people and force people into changing their behavior. So that we and guns is a public health issue, even though the NRA doesn't want it to be. That is really what it is in the end, a public health issue, just like cigarettes and just like, you know, and drunk driving. It's the same thing.
And I want to make it clear, you know, I'm certainly not calling for the banning of all guns. I got an email from a listener, and I've been meaning I just didn't have the time to respond directly. And he brought up the point that, like, look, you know, at one point and we're actually at that point now, if you have a 3D printer, people may not even know what I'm talking about, but they should look up, read up about this, because it's also fascinating. But the technology now exists if you have a 3D printer. In other words, a printer that actually can create a mechanism, a machine in some respects. You can now print out essentially a weapon, a gun. And we are probably, I don't know how many years away until this technology becomes ubiquitous, but it's not going to be for a while. And so the point is not so much that we want to ban all guns. We just want to make it so that it is not a casual thing, so that people
right.
have to have a sense of responsibility when they pick up a gun, in the same way that they would say, I have to be responsible if I'm drinking not to get in my car. And you know, that seems to me to be a very low threshold, and
right.
it's clearly not met. Otherwise,
well, look at all the laws we passed around. I mean, just in the last 20, 30 years around alcohol and around tobacco,
yep.
to try to lessen death, you know, public death from these, you know, to try to help people, to try to save people, to try to sort of stop them from marketing to kids, to try to stop them from, you know, from getting people addicted when they're young, and all the things we've done, and we've gone in exactly the opposite direction when it comes to guns. And I've never once come on your show or any other show that I've ever done and said that we should ban guns. I mean, that's the equivalent. Again, that's what the right and gun nuts love to do. That's what Wayne LaPierre did today during his I won't call it a press conference because he didn't take any questions, his little speech. You know, he basically sat there and made that, you know, people who hate the NRA and hate all gun owners. I don't hate all gun owners. I have many friends who are gun owners and family members, for that matter. I hate the NRA. Yeah, that's true, that part of the equation. But to try to conflate the two, I just think that there needs to be a balance in any society like this between what you get to do for enjoyment and my protecting my family. At some point, you could, you know, it'd be probably fine at times for you to speed 90 miles per hour, or, you know, in the middle of streets in New York. But we've determined that that's not safe for my family or your family, so you can't do that. That's how you live in a society together where the public good is, you know, is what we are all striving for. And so, you know, for me, I've said this many times before. Do I think you should be able to have shotguns and rifles in your house? Sure. Should you be able to have handguns in your house? Absolutely. I think they need to be registered and licensed, and you need to pass background checks when you do that kind of stuff. Yes. But I will say, and this is where I guess we all have disagreement with people, when it comes to bringing your guns out in public, most people don't understand that this country had a very history of very heavily regulating that, to the point where states like Kentucky and Wyoming and many others that you'd never guess didn't allow concealed carry in the 19th century. Cities, you know, out west like Tombstone made you check your guns before you went into town. When you bring your guns out into the public sphere, then you're endangering my family. And so I'm not going to say I don't believe in concealed carry in any instances, but it's now become a joke. Many states, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to show any time on the range. You don't have to take any kind of a background check. You can actually have a background of domestic assault and battery as a misdemeanor and other violent misdemeanors and still get guns. You can be blind. You can be a known habitual drug user. I mean, these are all things that are ridiculous. So if I'm going to allow somebody to conceal carry, man, I'm going to need the most stringent regulations humanly possible on their being able to do it.
Let's get to this press conference. I didn't hear all of it, but I did hear part of it. So Wayne LaPierre, he's the CEO of the NRA. Let's just start with this choice moment. I'm sure, Cliff, that that you have many favorite moments from this, but this is stunning. I mean, this guy is. Everybody waited in anticipation as if, you know, the NRA said, we're finally ready to become a partner in making sure that tragedies like this don't happen again. My reaction at the time was, F you. We don't need you to be a partner. Who the hell, you know, who are you? But here he is. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised by this. But here's the first thing that Wayne LaPierre demanded of Congress. Here it is.
Departments are strained, and the resources are severely limited. But their dedication and courage is second to none, and they can be deployed right now. I call on Congress today to act immediately to appropriate whatever is necessary to put armed police officers in every single school in this nation, and to do it now, to make sure that blanket safety is in place when our kids return to school in January. Before Congress reconvenes, before we engage in any lengthy debate over legislation, regulation, or anything else, as soon as our kids return to school after the holiday break, we need to have every single school in America immediately deploy a protection program proven to work. And by that, I mean armed security. Right now.
Now, I want to know. Wow. I want to know, is this when the guys in the white coats come out and walk this dude away? Is this guy.
He's bad, shite, I guess to not use the word insane. And it was the best thing he could have done for us. It really was. Because usually the only people that see this guy's paranoid, you know, insane ramblings are people that share his level of paranoia and insanity at CPAC and places like that. And so the fact that that a mainstream audience got to see this guy during the day saying the things that he says all the time really was just the best gift that we could have.
Now, let me start with the most rational response if I am to assume that this guy is actually serious, okay? And that is, why the F should the taxpayer subsidize the selling of the product that you are basically paid to ship?
Right. I sent out a tweet. They won't make any money off of this either, the way.
Right. But I mean, but the bottom line is like, wait a second. So I need, as a taxpayer, to pay so that your product, which kills people, is in some way not going to allow to happen. So in other words, I have to subsidize your profits. The one of the byproducts of you selling your guns is that this happens, and now I have to subsidize it. It's insane.
But it's so classic them, because that's as I've always said, this is their goal. Like when people sort of say, oh, you're being cynical, and no, they want more shootings, because if person A shoots person B, then person C buys a gun because they're scared. This is their business model. Yeah. So here it's even better, because now you don't just have individuals doing it, but you're going to have the government subsidize you by doing it. And not to even mention, you know, that we've already gone down what I think you and I have discussed before and others discuss often, the slippery slope towards a militarization of our society.
Oh, God.
So I mean, now we're going to do this too? Like now, I mean, is this like the movie Blade Runner or something, right? I mean, now we're literally going to go to a future where people have just because we can't take their product off the streets that's killing people, we're going to actually put more of their products out there, so people literally need to go through armed guards just to get into school every day. I'm not even arguing with the potential for maybe having guards check up on schools here and there and doing things like that. You know, I don't know. I'm undecided on whether I think that's good or not. But assigning specific guards to specific schools and turning them into essentially militarized zones constantly. I mean, and then of course, you know, these guys who hate the government can't do anything right. Remember, you know, they always say the jackbooted thugs of the ATF, but now they want the government to subsidize it.
Well, that's the other
thing. Now we're trusting the government, I guess, right?
Yeah, if people didn't get enough, and I want you to tell me just a little bit more about this press conference, just because it was just so stunning. But one thing
I spoke in tongues, I would make more sense than he did, so I'm not sure how. I'll try my best to tell you about it. But
back in 95... former President George Bush, not the this is a Poppy Bush, 41, not 43, wrote to, I guess, the National Rifle Association. I was outraged when, even in the wake of the Oklahoma City tragedy, Mr. Wayne LaPierre, executive vice president of the NRA, this is before he was the CEO of the NRA, defended his attack on federal agents as jackbooted thugs. To attack Secret Service agents or ATF people or any government law enforcement people as wearing Nazi bucket helmets and black stormtroopers wanting to attack law-abiding citizens is vicious slander on good people. Now, of course, he wants those same jackbooted thugs, apparently, in the schools. But this is a guy who alienated, the president of the United States 15, 20 years ago now, who's now the head of this agency. And I think you're right. This press conference was the best thing that could happen to people who are foes of the NRA because it basically exposed the insanity of these people.
I think we just got 20% closer to getting good legislation just from him opening his mouth.
And
you know, it was kind of like during the campaign when we kept saying, Mitt Romney, just keep talking.
Right.
Like that's what this reminded me of. Like when Mitt Romney came out and said the stuff about Benghazi that night, and then he came out to clarify it and said even worse things
right.
in a press conference, and everybody was like, did you plan for that press conference? Do you have people in there that understand the media? And that's the way I felt with this. These guys didn't even have just a night, they had a week. And I was sitting here and I was like, did people actually, advise you on this? You thought this was good? Again, thank you. I'm really appreciative of Wayne LaPierre for once in my life, because I think that this is, anybody sitting on the fence who saw this display of insanity, you know, not admitting anything. It's all Hollywood's fault. It's all a failing mental health system, which I will remind you that one of the big things that the NRA decided to score their people on was opposing Obamacare, as if that had anything to do with guns.
Right.
But they did, because they will oppose health care, but now they're complaining there's not enough health care and mental health care out there. So they hate the government, and the government's evil, and you point out the jackbooted thugs. George H.W. Bush resigned from the NRA
right.
over that statement and over his referring to President Bill Clinton as a murderer because of what happened in Waco. This is the guy that's attacked our presidents in those kinds of personal terms, called them murderers, called them evil, corrupt, anything you can imagine, has talked about them wanting to come and knock your door down and take your guns, has referred to them essentially in the ATF for 6 years now, as President Obama recently pointed out, something I've been working on in my work with Mayors Against Illegal Guns for a while, has refused to allow someone to run the ATF. They've had the Senate block, them from putting anybody in charge. And then they claim, well, look how incompetent the government is when it comes to doing any of this stuff. Well, it's by design.
And the other question I have for you about Wayne LaPierre is, did he get to that press conference in a time machine? He's blaming.
I know,
he's blaming natural,
like 1985.
Natural born killers and American Psycho and Mortal Kombat.
I was expecting him to start referring to some of them like those awesome Atari games I used to play. Like,
no kidding.
And Pitfall.
Like,
when they fall in the pits with the alligators.
Pong. You know, like, where is this guy living?
And where's the compassion from Mrs. Pac-Man when she's going and eating all those dots?
Well, I mean, it really did have a feel like he was just trotting out the same playbook. The guy has been stuck essentially into some time period where the Clintons are killing Vince Foster and dragging his body to a park. And that, you know, and the thing is, people have to understand that this is relevant because the NRA is sending out emails to its huge email list and telling their members that all sorts of fantasy, crazy conspiracy theories about Obama taking their guns and about you've got to do this right now. And so this is one of those things where at least there's some sense of integrity. I think they're just as crazy at the top as their emails would make them sound. And frankly, they're living in a WorldNet daily world of sheer insanity, one world takeover. It certainly behooves other people and other interests that they're doing this, so that you get things like whatever it is, cutting Social Security, which we'll talk about in a moment. But the fact of the matter is, this is a bunch of lunatics. It's a bunch of lunatics.
And that's the thing. You know, sometimes we try to figure it out with Glenn Beck You know, is he doing it for the money or is he crazy? I think it's sort of a game we always play with some of these guys on the right. And sometimes I like to come to the conclusion, as I find myself often saying, they're not mutually exclusive. I mean, there's a little bit of both. That's what I think is going on here, because I like to point out to people and get very specific Philanthropy Magazine. You know, he's the second best paid CEO of a nonprofit. Not that the NRA really is a nonprofit, but they fall under that. After, like, I think it was the American Heart Association or something, he made, when they calculate all of his benefits, I think this was for 2010, so I'm sure it's gone up since then, $1.281 million that year. And so you just need to keep in mind, I'm sure there are all sorts of perks on, you know, that he gets on top of that, that he's becoming each year an additional millionaire by doing this. That there's a reason to do this, that he has made a decision and he's crazy and he's paranoid and he's a nut, because he wouldn't be willing to, because in my estimation, I don't think you can be as sick as to get up and say the things he said and not be. But also, in whatever parts of his mind, fevered mind, actually work, he realizes that stuff like Newtown is what pays his salary.
Right.
I mean, again, you know, there's just no point. I think we all try to use nice language and sugarcoat it. They're domestic terrorists. I mean, they're tied at the hip in both everything they say, in the rhetoric they use, with the people they hang out with the militia movement in this country. You know, their two board members, including Congressman Don Young, go and sign a pledge by a militia member in Alaska, who then goes and gets arrested because he's got a plan with his buddies to kill police officers and federal judges. I mean, this is who we're talking about here. You know what I mean? I mean, that's probably the highest profile case. But Timothy McVeigh was an NRA member and somebody who sold guns at gun shows, at unregulated gun shows, and did stuff like that, and literally used their rhetoric word for word, was reading their stuff, had it in his car when he was arrested. I mean, you know, this is not stuff that sort of is tough to understand. They encourage this behavior. They support this behavior. They align themselves with it ideologically. You know, I mean, and it has results all the time. You know, a guy who back a couple of years ago in Pittsburgh who shot three cops, and when they asked him why, he said he thought it was Obama coming to get his guns. Well, where did he hear that from?
Right, right.
You know, I mean, this has real-world results. It's terrorism. It gets people killed all the time. And it's sickening, and this guy's sickening. But again, I thank him for showing how sickening he is to a much larger audience of people.
All right. Well, so let's leave Wayne LaPierre here. We got just about another 10 minutes, and this is the last.
As Bill Maher once said about Glenn Beck, we'll leave him to sit around and play in his own poo.
Indeed. Let's for a moment gears here, because it's the end of the year, and Wayne LaPierre will go play in his own poo. Meanwhile, I wanted to sort of have a chance to look back on stuff, but of course, you know, LaPierre just dropped this crazy bomb on us. But let's talk a little bit about what happened in the past week here in terms of the fiscal cliff, because in many respects, once you leave aside the election, and when you look forward, this is going to be the. Are you there?
Hello?
Hello? What's that?
I'm sorry. I hit the phone. Go ahead. Sorry.
Is that your kid dialing something?
What'd you say? Yes, it was.
Oh, that's funny. So, I mean, one of the things that we're going to look forward to for the rest of this year is going to be set. I think most of our politics are going to be set in the next 2 or 3 months. And whether that happens now or in the next 2 or 3 months are going to be set in the next 5 or 6 days. So we started the week with President Obama, or I guess the end of last week, President Obama essentially putting on the table cuts to Social Security, some stimulus. I've broken down this offer with David Day, and it's a joke offer. Sadly, Nancy Pelosi comes out and tries to sell the idea that this is a technical fix. I've talked about the CPI enough, the change CPI on this program enough for people to understand that this is not a technical fix. It will there's no economist out there who's not saying that this change CPI probably and most likely does underestimate the growth of inflation to the extent that we can know this. That is suffered by the elderly. So we're looking at a cut in Social Security. If it wasn't a cut, there's no point in anyways. And so we're looking at a cut in Social Security benefits. Nancy Pelosi signed on to this. And then yesterday, something bizarre happens. Just walk us through what happened with Boehner in the House.
Well, he was going to vote on Plan B, but Plan B got aborted. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. Plan B was his plan to get all of his people together to vote and to have a tax cut for everybody making – or you know, keep taxes low for everybody making under $1 million a year, which is a threshold at which he would like to set this whole thing to pretend he's still a man of the middle class, which, of course, he doesn't seem to get that most people don't think people who make $500,000 or $700,000 a year are middle class. So he's being an idiot to begin with. Every poll shows that he is wrong, and people blame him for this whole mess. But second of all, it turns out that his caucus is so unbelievably crazy that even though Grover Norquist gave them his blessing, you know, they had to go in like in a Godfather-like scene and kiss his ring and said, you can do this, a lot of their caucus refused to do it. So he had 30 to 40 votes from what I read he couldn't get, which meant he wasn't gonna, no Democrats were going to vote for this thing. So they pulled their own bill. And then they said, Merry Christmas.
All right. So let's break down what this means here. First off, people should know that there is a Hastert rule, at least in the Republican caucus, which basically says we're not going to pass anything without a majority of Republicans voting for it.
Yeah.
And he is somewhat constrained by that, but that's just a rule. That's like, you know, Ronald Reagan's we don't criticize other Republicans rule. That's not a real rule. It's just a way to sort of it's just a rhetoric there.
Right.
Now, what clearly happened is the Democrats didn't help out in passing this. Boehner looks weak. There's questions as to whether or not his speaker that he will survive this. I think he will because there was a lot of like the Tea Party, you know, the Paul Ryans and the Cantors were sort of along for this ride. But a lot of people are making a big deal of this, and it's embarrassing for Boehner. It probably means there's no way we're going to get a deal before January 1st, which is great because then all of a sudden higher tax rates is not something that you need to trade something for. I'm speaking specifically about Social Security, but there's no reason to believe that when the Republicans hold the Democrats hostage over the debt ceiling, you've already had the Democrats now basically say the change CPI is okay. It's just stunning their bloodthirsty desire to cut Social Security. Now, with that said, there's a lot of people out there who also argue that this was very this was a cunning move by the White House and by Nancy Pelosi because it forced essentially Boehner to take this vote and prove that he couldn't even get his own caucus to go along with him on their plan, never mind the president's plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously exactly right. It's been – I mean, it's amazing. You know, I don't – I mean, the press conference today may have been surreal, but that last night was surreal too. I mean, a guy sort of having so little control, and in a way, he's been getting so played by the Democrats and a lot of this stuff because, you know, the Republicans kind of came out acting like that everything, nothing had changed after the election and that he had all the same leverage he had, which of course he didn't. And President Obama and the Democrats, frankly, offered something that was way too nice. I don't know if that's the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Something that that is ridiculous, and we've all fought against because the chain CPI would be a cut, and cut a cut in the thousands for older seniors. And again, shared sacrifice. The term means nothing when one group of people gives up. Maybe going, you know, they don't give up anything because they're gazillionaires,
yeah,
and the other people give up eating.
There is no such thing as shared sacrifice in this country. I'm sorry, it's a joke. There is nothing that the wealthy will ever give up that could constitute even the closest definition of sacrifice. It just doesn't exist.
Give up like one section of one Swiss bank account.
How much? Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you're making $500,000 a year, you have several million dollars worth of assets, and that's on the low end of the spectrum of these people that we're talking about within the context of the 2%, let's say. How much money would you have to give up beyond what you're paying now for it to be a sacrifice? 50, 75, 100, 200,000. I mean, honestly, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, $15,000 a year. Are you kidding me? There's no sacrifice involved in that. That's the stuff that gets caught behind the cushions.
No, it's ridiculous. So, I mean, you had two things going on here, obviously. One of them is that Boehner doesn't have control of these people. Again, you know, they created the monster, and now they're dealing with it. And they've got a lot of people, and they gerrymandered districts so that there's a lot of Republicans there who are only worried about getting challenged from the right, not the left, assuming that's physically, humanly possible. But I suppose you never know when the next self-proclaimed witch might primary them. And so what that leaves you with is a situation where a lot of these guys, they'll do the craziest thing. They're not going to give in on anything. Now, there are, I think, out of that caucus, probably, you know, if the Democrats come back and then vote for the tax cuts for up to $250,000, my guess is you will find enough Republicans willing to go along. I could be wrong, but I do think there's still, I mean, at least I know this, there are 28 Republicans that are in districts that Obama won. So, you know, if they want to go and block a tax cut for the middle class and take the heat on that, as they're already going to take the heat for this, I guess that's their prerogative. They're going to be the ones that look terrible for that. So that's the one thing that's going on. And obviously, the other thing that's going on is just the president even offering this change CPI, which, again, you know, you and I are always in the same field, same general place on this, which is we give credit when credit's due. And yet we'll criticize. And I thought he was for a while there was really holding up. No, we won't raise the Medicare age. And no, but then, boom, you go and you give something like this, and you raise your threshold from $250,000 to $400,000, and you do these things. And you just want to be like, don't you get? I mean, what about reelection is it that you can't accept?
Well, he's not getting reelected. I mean, so it's a real question from the House perspective, and it's going to become even harder for them to trade this away, I think, because look, we're going to go in 2 weeks. We're going to have the Bush tax cuts are automatically going to expire. So the only action to be taken will be to provide tax cuts for middle-class voters. All of the sequester starts to kick in. Now, obviously, a lot of this stuff is backloaded, but if you want to avoid this, the only thing that happens at that point is more spending, okay? Right? I mean, because we're not talking about more cuts. It's just shifting cuts around and actually diminishing the impact of cuts. And then there's the debt ceiling. So it seems to me that if Republicans are going to hold up the debt ceiling, the Democrats then say, okay, fine, we'll do something with the sequester. But there's no leverage. There's no reason to put Social Security on the table after that. There's no reason to do it now. But what's becoming a fact on the ground, as it were, you know, a lot of people have been saying, go over the cliff. It puts you in a much better a bargaining position. The president clearly didn't want to go over the cliff. The House members didn't want to go over the cliff, or at the very least, if they were going to go over the cliff, they wanted to make sure that it was the Republicans' fault. And even though polls overwhelmingly showed that Americans would blame Republicans, now I would imagine those polls are going to be even more overwhelming because Republicans can't even vote on their own proposal. But come January, this is going to put the Democrats in a much better position of strength. And I have little doubt that they're going to continue to pursue this, you know, things like chain CPI. But it's going to make it a much harder sell to their base. And I think we're going to have a lot more leverage to push it onto.
So do I. Look, it gives us more time. And I think we've been able to derail other things, bigger Social Security cuts, Medicare age going up, and other things by a lot of us making a lot of noise wherever we can. And I think this gives us another opportunity to do that and to point out that this change CPI saves virtually no money. However, it does hurt seniors. You'd save more money by bulk negotiating for Medicare prescription drugs, as we talked about, you know, cutting 20% of the bases around the world, for example, because I don't know what it is we're doing defending Japan at this point. But, I mean, there's we don't need to go into all of it. We've gone into it on your show before. There's so many ways to do this, to not take this. It's just symbolic. It was supposed to be, well, it's a symbolic thing where I'm saying I'm willing to concede something because the Republicans obviously hate the elderly so much and the poor that I'm willing to concede and say they're allowed to hurt a certain number of them just for this symbolic thing. So it's obviously wrong morally. It's stupid economically. It makes no sense on a policy level because it doesn't get us much money anyhow. And why are we conceding that?
You know, and I'd like to hear what you think, Sam, because obviously I understand in all sort of negotiations, even though Obama won big and we won big, you do have to sit down and say, okay, I'll give up 10% or I'll give up 15%. I don't know what that 10% or 15% looks like. I've tried to think about that myself. I know it's not Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. I know it's not programs for schools. I know it's not whatever. So I'm not sure what it is.
He did give up 10 to 15%, and that was saying, okay, $400,000 a year and up, $500,000 a year.
So would that be acceptable? I'm interested. If he just
I'm far less concerned right now with, a 2 year, a decrease in, maintenance of the Bush tax cuts. I'm far less interested in that, or we're concerned about that than in Social Security, frankly.
I'm with you. I think that's because that's what I was wondering, because I would not, most of these programs I look at, I would not be able to.
Capital gains
is
really the bigger issue, frankly. And,
getting rid of the carried interest loophole.
Carried interest and capital gains. Those two aspects of the tax code, I think, are more important. Raising, the threshold so that people only 400,000 as opposed to 250,000.
I agree with you. If they would get rid of the carried interest loop, which they won't do, but if they would do that, I would allow that to be, because I do think there are some people who while I wouldn't, they're certainly not middle class, between 250 and 400,000, who may still have school loans, may have a variety of things. They're not making off like people that are making gazillions on Wall Street. I think if I were going to concede, and don't get me wrong saying that I want that, but what I'm saying is if I were going to concede anything, so I was going to be interested to hear what you'd have to say. That's the one concession that maybe I would make.
I would also say, if you're going to offer the chain CPI, I want to see the cap lifted first. And then I also want to see some type of legislation that says essentially any dollar coming in to the Social Security Trust Fund from beyond this point is in a lockbox. Okay, it cannot be used for general revenue.
You do that whole Gore thing, aren't you?
Yeah, well, because then at that point, what will happen is within 15 years, there's going to be so much money in that trust fund. Social Security is going to be so solvent that there's going to be pressure to raise benefits. I would be open to something like that. But to simply cut Social Security, it's just absurd. There's nothing. You're not getting anything for that. It's absurd. And you know what? If you're going to cut Social Security under those circumstances, there's no way in the world you should offer it. You make the Republican Party eat that. You make them come out and have Boehner out there and say, we want to cut Social Security. It's just absurd. It's just absurd. And you know that is part of what makes it a sweeter pot, supposedly, is that the Democrats have offered this so that the Republicans can run against them in 2014.
That's what drives me crazy about what the president did. It's like, why would you put that out there? It's just a reminder. Didn't you learn from 2010 when they ran against you on Medicare?
No, see, he doesn't care. I mean, the real question to me is, why is Nancy Pelosi doing it? And I think Nancy Pelosi is doing it because she's made some calculation that the number of people who understand what the chain CPI means will be less than the number of people who will just perceive a general sense that Democrats are willing to be partners and the Republicans aren't. I think
that's
short-sighted.
Maybe he doesn't care, I'll say quickly, but he should care, because I think he does still care, even if he doesn't care about people, sadly. He should care about he seems to care about his legacy. And if the Republicans take over the Senate and build on their house, his legacy will look a hell of a lot worse.
I don't know. Tell that to Bill Clinton. Tell that to Bill Clinton. I mean, I just don't think it's a concern.
Well, Bill Clinton, they tried to impeach. I don't think that was a fun period of time for him.
Well, yes, but did it hurt his legacy? No. He ended up going out with more popularity than he came in with because of it. He also lost the House and Senate. He is never held to account on that. He is considered by the Beltway elite to have been a hero to do welfare reform, which was a disaster.
But he didn't actually get impeached. Well, he did, but he didn't get removed.
Well, yeah, and so
Obama could get removed.
Well, what are they going to do? They're going to remove him 2 months before office, before he leaves office.
I mean, look, they're not people that exist in the realm of sanity the way the rest of us do. So I have no idea what they're going to do.
I think
it's like when you're playing chicken with like North Korea,
right?
You know what I mean? That's what I feel like here, because these people are all just it's crazy.
They're not rational actors. But with that said, I got to say that I think. From Obama's perspective, I think the theory in that White House is that if we're talking legacy, cutting Social Security will improve the legacy, because they know who creates these legacies. It is the wealthy establishment, and Pete Peterson is going to drop several hundred million dollars into writing that legacy. He already has spent $500 million on it, and so that's their perspective on this. And so I think mostly the leverage rests with the House members. The House members have to deny the votes that are going to be needed to bring any agreement through the House, because you're going to have at least 25-30 Republicans who are not going to go along with Boehner, and they're going to be looking to House Democrats to make up the difference, and they shouldn't give it to them.
I couldn't agree more.
All right, so look, we have just a minute or two. Give me a resolution that you're going to make for 2013. What can we also expect? What are we going to see this year, Cliff?
Well, I got to say one thing in 2 seconds, just so people know, that while Wayne LaPierre was holding that press conference on how we need more guns, there was a guy walking up and down the street in a town in Pennsylvania in Blair County who just shot and killed 4 people and injured 5 more in Altoona. So, just so you know that Wayne LaPierre's view of things is right. But with that put aside, what am I going to try to do in the new year? My resolutions, are to be they're simple ones, Sam. To be as good a father to my kids as I can be.
Boring.
I know it's boring. To get coked up and hang out with prostitutes. Oh wait, I wasn't supposed to say that one. And to destroy Wayne LaPierre and the National Rifle Association.
Yes. I had a feeling.
My resolutions.
If I was Wayne LaPierre, I'd be very concerned right now, because it's one thing to be hiding out in your bunker and having Cliff Schechter, hitting the airwaves against you. It's another when you have like exposed yourself and given Cliff Schechter this much stuff to work with. So
the viral videos that can be created just from his press conference are just freaking awesome.
all right. Well, Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for coming on this program every week in, week out in 2012. I mean, also in 2011, but we're just ending 2012. So I want to wish you and your family a wonderful little break and a happy new year. Merry
you too,
Christmas.
Sammy.
Thank you.
Let me say thank you for having me on. It's very, I enjoy these conversations of ours very much. It's cathartic at the end of the week, and I learned something, and it's a good thing. So I appreciate your doing this.
Well, if I can help you not kick your dog at the end of the week.
yeah, I appreciate that. It's not a dog, but they're 2 cats, and they're running scared.
Yeah, they run. They're much quicker, too. So
now the ASPCA is going to come after me. I love cats, kids. I love cats.
All right, Cliff Schechter, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, Cliff.
All right, take care, man.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, if I can swing all this, we will have both Isabel Gillies and Matthew Film Guy. Hopefully, I'll be able to play their theme songs, too. All right. We'll be back in just a minute.
Here it is, the Republican health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Get Matthew. Hold on. Holy crap, that is not Matthew Weiss. I think I dialed... All right, hold on. Are you still there? Yeah, that was... Bear with me. Oh, boy. I screwed up.
Driving on 9, I sure miss you. Pass a motel, looking at the pines.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think I have finally resolved that.
We're always pitted against each other.
All right, well, hey, guys, what are you doing? Why are you having a conversation without me?
All right.
What is one of you guys listening to the show now?
I can't.
Well, yeah. Now, so Isabel was freaking out because apparently she doesn't know how to listen to the show. Matthew, it sounds like you had it on in the background.
It's gone now.
All right.
My grapefruit didn't click.
I had a problem because I was doubling up on the Skype thing, and I had to add your contacts on the Skype to call you to add people during a conversation. When I inputted Matthew Film Guy's number, I forgot to change it to United States, so it was Afghanistan, which is why, Isabel, when we called Matthew, we got an answering machine in Afghanistan, and I couldn't understand anything they were saying.
Well, we really could, and then I felt like I was in an episode of Homeland.
There you go.
That's my summer home.
All right, wait a second. Guys, I'm sorry. Let me play your each of your what do you call it?
Theme songs.
Yeah.
Who goes first?
Who goes first? So competitive, Matthew.
It's that V. It got to me.
You're talking over the song.
Isabel Gillies to the show.
Wait, what? Are we on a delay?
No, you're talking over the song. Can you hear it?
No.
You can't?
To watch on Netflix.
Really?
It's the only way I do.
All right. Well, it's happening right now.
From Isabel.
Which one is it?
Isabel's.
Okay. Sure. Sometimes it's better to go last.
I was just thinking that. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. Well, and now I will do Matthew's. This is not easy. I've got like 5,000 different things. This is tricky. All right, here it is.
I can't.
You can't hear it, guys.
You ever heard mine?
Oh, I love yours.
All right, there you go. There it is. Done. All right, guys. Sorry. I'm having technical... you can barely hear them, huh? All right.
Can you not hear us? I can't really hear you.
You can't hear me?
No, I can hear you.
Yeah, you sound all right. You sound a little like off mic. You're like far, but
yeah,
I can hear you.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. That's not being translated to anybody else. All right, guys.
Yeah.
I just put everything really low. What the heck is going on? Hold on. I'm trying to find out what the deal is with the sound. Hopefully it should be okay.
Sorry, this is part of the show.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, technical difficulties are, I've been there in the last 24 hours in a way that you can't even believe.
Well, why don't you tell us about that, Isabel?
Well, I don't know if it's very interesting, but when I tell you that 70,000 words of my book that was due today that I handed in already. I was due today, and yesterday I was cold. So I went, because I was about to spell check it, I went into my bed, and my belt buckle hit the mouse on my computer, and suddenly 70,000 words turned into asterisks.
Oh, my God.
And not only that, it was 2,222 pages of asterisks.
Wait a second.
My whole book, gone, asterisks. Peter came up from work. I started to freak out. I wasn't touching the computer. Everyone was like, don't touch it, don't touch it. Not everyone, but just Peter. And then he did something, and the whole thing turned into tiny squares.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Tiny squares. Every letter was a square.
You couldn't undo it?
Nope, couldn't undo it. It was a nightmare. It lasted for 24 hours. I've talked to everybody at Apple. It was a total disaster.
Wait, so what happened?
It's kind of boring because it had to be sent to Peter's computer where it showed up, and then he emailed it back to me, but
it was formatted
differently, and then it was a huge problem with Microsoft Word. And finally, it had to be transferred to Pages, but it was a disaster, and it was many, many tears, and I didn't sleep the night before.
All right, but the end, it all worked out okay.
The end
moral
is
of the story, don't
and
wear belts around computers.
Just don't maybe write in bed, which I did.
Oh, you know what? You lost the font type that you were using. That was what the problem was.
No.
Yeah, that's what Matt just did. He just, the font, whatever, crapped out on Microsoft Word. If you had turned the whole thing into a different font, it probably would have been there.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I think so.
That's my take on it, too.
Wow.
All right. Well, this is
great.
Anyway. And Matthew, what about you? I mean, do you...
Well, I have even a bigger tragedy. I have not even written a book.
All right, guys. Well, that's great. Today we've established that everybody's having technical difficulties. Matthew's just having life difficulties.
Sam, I'll just tell you real quickly, that reminds me of the time years ago I had a temp job where I was sat in an office all by myself for about a week, put in charge of putting this Excel spreadsheet together, and I just totally blew it off. And by the end of the week, I was thinking, how am I going to present this to them, because they're expecting me to have a lot of fill-ins where I'm calling these people. And basically all I did was I opened a JPEG in Microsoft Word, copied all the gibberish, pasted that into the Excel spreadsheet, sorted it, handed it to them, and they thought it was a corrupted data file, so I got out of it. Because it looked like all the squares and stuff.
That's so devious.
Wow. I didn't go in and plan on it, but that was my way to get out of it.
So you spent a lot more time just basically trying to figure out how you could get away with not doing your job and then doing your job.
Yeah, I was instant messaging. This was like at the beginning of my having the temp, and I just could not be forced to sit there and call people and fill out their answers into the spreadsheet, and no one checked up on me for a week.
I mean, this is really reminiscent of the time that you were working for me, it seems like.
Is that why the movie came out that way?
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
What happens when you try and go to sleep, though? Are you like, God, I'm a bad person? Or are you just like, screw it, Excel sheets are stupid? And
well, I sometimes have trouble sleeping, but then I realized that I had been exploited by the temp agency and not paid any, didn't have any health insurance, got a measly wage, and was sitting in like a cancer-infested office for many hours, and, you know, they have other people who took care of it after me, so I got away with it somehow.
Oh, my gosh. If I use two coffee stirrers at Starbucks, I can't sleep.
Oh, my God. Isabel.
All right, guys. Okay, this is wonderful, but let's hear.
We're just getting to know each other. It's kind of fun.
No, this is not how I want it to work out. I didn't want to be.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I didn't like,
we'll talk later.
You know, this is not. This is too coffee clatch-ish.
Okay.
I want to hear from each of you the movie that I have to watch before 2013 happens, and I want to hear it right now. Matthew, film guy, go.
You need to watch any number of the dozens of films that I've recommended you this past year, which you have not seen.
That's lame. Oh, okay.
But allow me to continue. I have picked out one of my favorite movies of the past year. It's also made a lot of top 10 lists of best movies of the year. And it's another film by the filmmakers who I recommended you before, the Dardenne brothers. This is a movie that won the Cannes Film Festival Grand Jury's Prize last year. It's called The Kid with a Bike. And I understand, Isabel, have you seen this movie?
No, but I've heard of it.
Okay. And Sam, I understand that you've had some good news lately, and you're going to be having a son. Is that right?
That is correct.
Congratulations.
I'm almost 100% sure it's mine. And yes, we're going to have a baby in, well, oh, God, almost 2 months, 2.5 months.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, it's with that good news in mind, or additional burden, however you choose to look at it.
I just passed out.
That I recommend this movie because it's about a boy who's abandoned by his father. And I'm not saying that that's what you're going to do, but this is basically what could happen to your son if you do decide to make that decision. He gets bounced around from a group home to a woman who finally adopts him, and he falls in with criminals, and it's one of the Dardenne brothers' typical socially conscious but never really preachy and never overly preoccupied with sociology as much as emotion and relationship kind of films, shot kind of documentary style, very minimalist aesthetic. And it's just another one of their really deep kind of almost Bressonian spiritual films about how people need each other.
And especially a boy with a bike?
Yeah, a kid with a bike.
It's in French.
It's in French. You'll have to read some subtitles. But it's about how a son needs his father.
It's not necessarily what would happen to a kid that a boy that I abandoned, because that's what happens in France. But in this country, it wouldn't work out that way. In other words, I'm keeping my options open.
Okay, and I'll tell you, actually, it'll be worse, because it's interesting to see in this film the public health care system that actually puts him up and takes care of him and all the different sort of resources that he does have at his disposal. None of them replace a father, but you'll see. And also the criminal justice system, the way he gets involved with these criminals and how they treat him in that is also kind of eye-opening compared to how I think your son would probably turn out if you did this.
Holy smokes.
Wow. All right.
Matthew, the film guy.
Yeah. You've never listened to the show, have you?
No. I don't ever listen.
Whoa, what? Why? What?
No, I listened to the gun control one, and then I tweeted it, FYI.
But you didn't, you really never listened to the show.
I'm telling you, I do when I'm at home with my computer, but most of the time I'm writing, and I don't let myself, I have willpower, and I don't let myself listen.
Oh, she's fighting it. I guess.
Oh, I
see. She's fighting it.
All right. Well, Isabel, I guess sometimes, you know, we walk into situations completely blind and don't feel it. So are you going to say Moonraker 2? You going to suggest?
All right.
So
all
Matthew
right.
has suggested that I watch the French film Kid with a Bike because of its sociological implications, even though it's driven by character and drama, but it also gives a good insight into the different structures of societies which are out there for troubled children who are abandoned by their parents. And Isabel is going to recommend
another Moonraker. One, but I'll just say that I'm feeling a little insecure because it's in French, but I have recommended a French film before about Nazi Germany. So
I don't
there you
remember
go.
That, but
did you watch it, by the way?
No. Le okay. Directeur, was it? Le Directeur?
It was, I forgot, but it was awesome. Now, okay, the film that I'm recommending to you today is a film by another brother duo.
It's the Farrelly
American
Brothers.
What?
The Farrelly Brothers?
No.
I'm kidding. You know, Isabel, you give great movie suggestions. So I'm reeling from the Moonraker thing has been a real problem.
That was just because it was the 50th anniversary and my friend was in it. Okay, now listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
Yeah.
You might have seen this already, but if you haven't, I have another one. But here's the one. Ready?
Yeah.
True Grit.
Seen it.
Damn it.
True Grit?
You mean the remake, right?
Yes, the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, how would I not have seen the Coen brothers movie?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to find a streaming one, and I thought that was a really good one.
Well, Matthew, do you want to criticize that?
No, I actually haven't seen the remake of True Grit. I remember the classic with John
Wayne.
You
hear that, Isabel? You wouldn't even go see the remake.
It's not that. I respect the Coen brothers, what they do. They're not my favorite, but I saw their movie, A Simple Man. Was that the one with the Jewish guy growing up in Minnesota? That was great. That was one of their more recent movies.
We have that movie poster framed in our house.
In fact,
it's a serious man.
We're
going
to have Richard
Kind.
Richard Kind, one of the stars from
that
movie, is going to be.
I wonder if that's for. Did you see that one, Sam?
What? Yeah, of course I did. I just said it.
Okay,
I'm have
all
Richard
right,
Kind.
So here's my second one. Here's my second one,
okay.
In case you had seen it. I had another one. I actually have three, but here's another
one.
Oh,
Matthew, did you hear that? She has three.
I have four.
It's very hard to find one that you can stream,
that's
by
true.
The way.
Right, okay.
That's true.
So here's my second. Because then I was going to do, should I do the one that you couldn't stream? That
yeah.
You could maybe order, or should I not do that one?
Well, let's hear it.
Win-win.
I never even heard of that.
Oh my God! What? Well, does it right. count because you can't stream it? You can only do it, you know, if you
on Amazon?
Order it.
What about it? Maybe it's on Amazon.
That is an incredible movie with Paul Giamatti and Amy Ryan, and it's about this kid. Oh my God! It's a father son movie too. It's about this kid who Paul Giamatti sort of takes under his wing, and Paul Giamatti's a wrestling coach, and this kid is a wrestler, and it is such a beautiful movie. It's so funny. Amy Ryan is incredible. She should have won an Oscar for it. It's like a sports drama kind of, but it's independent, and it takes place in New Jersey, and it is fantastic. fantastic.
All right.
That is my real one, because that was my first one that I was going to do. And you can't stream it, but you can. But just please, win-win, okay? The director is Thomas McCarthy.
All right, maybe on Amazon streaming. We'll check it out.
It's a quirky. It is so fucking funny. Okay.
Whoa. All right. Wow.
Excuse me.
So much for
so
Milo
funny.
Listening to this episode of the show.
Excuse me. It's very funny, and it's very heartwarming, and it's father-son, and it is brilliant.
All right. Well, so there we have it. Win-win.
Win-win.
And the...
I think that describes this segment, too, doesn't it, Sam?
Yes. the kid with a bike. Yeah.
Wait. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Sam,
what?
You have to promise to watch both and then say which one you liked better.
Ooh, I like that. I think there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings involved in something like that.
Can you do that?
That sounds good.
This is
a
throwdown, man.
I will do it, definitely.
Isabel, you need to know that Sam watches, I'd say, at least 75% more of your movies than he does the ones that I recommend.
That's not true.
Is any indication.
That's not true.
No, are you sure?
I mean, I think your math is off a little bit, but definitely, yes, I watch more of it.
Okay, but still, a portion more. He usually takes your recommendations over mine, but, you know, I don't take it personally. I'm just saying, you can be proud of that.
Well,
all
I don't
right,
know
guys.
Why that is, but let's have a throwdown, honestly.
All right, I'll watch both of them. I'm going to do it. Win-win, and the kid
with
the bike.
Are you up for it, Maddie?
Absolutely.
Oh, that is, you don't even know how it sort of... much of a poke in his eyes to call him Maddie. He does not like that.
No,
I don't know if you noticed. It's Matthew.
When it comes out of Isabel's mouth, it sounds nice. So it's
well, guys, I want to thank you guys for coming on the program.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Late Hanukkah. Whatever it is that you guys are doing.
Same to you, Sam.
Being secularists, we don't really talk about that. So we'll see you guys in 2013.
Yeah, man.
Great.
All right.
And
thanks
then we'll
a
do a double show where you reveal which one it is.
All right.
Yeah, we should do this more often. This is great.
Well, I don't know. It wasn't as, wasn't
like
as
being
much.
Micromanaged.
Yeah.
Too many personalities here.
Yeah. All right, guys.
All right.
Have a great, we'll talk to you
thanks,
soon.
Thanks, Sam. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Sam. Bye. Bye, Matthew.
All right, folks. We'll take a break. Oh, hold on for a second. Wait a second. What am I doing? You know, I think we're going to take a break and head into the better half of the program. We're going to go late today. Coming up later in the show for members, my daughter will be here. Hold on, sweetie. Not yet. Give me 1 second to give us a recap of 2012. So, folks, reminder, we'll have five... we'll be doing best ofs for the rest of 2012. So for those of you who are leaving us with the free show, we'll see you in 2013. Thanks so much for your support this year. I hope you will continue to listen. All right, we'll be back in just a minute with the better half of the program. Hold on. We'll be back in just 1 second.